We are not heroes, nor are we villains, neither kings nor magicians, but we can tell you their stories. We are the Lore Keepers, and we welcome you to Hallowmay.
Welcome to Hallowmay. You are listening to Lore Keepers, a world-building podcast where we talk about eons of history, heroes and villains, and the legends they leave behind. I'm Frank.
I'm Carter.
And Carter needed to climb up into the mic to get that one out. Whether you're interested in stories, looking for inspiration in your own world-building, or perhaps... He just leaned way in. Or perhaps you want a piece of the action, and he's doing it again. Now I can see his underbeard. We've got something for you. So this week... It's not that bad. He actually he's got an okay underbeard. Little pet, you might I think that the quarantine has had its way with your neck. You may want to trim that up a little bit. Also, I can cut this out if it's oh boy. All right, I'm gonna stop looking at that. So this week we're talking about. I feel like I could lose myself and it's like a forest. Hey, I only know this from experience. My own underbeard gets really bad if I don't trim it to my neck. This is a great intro.
this week it's not a neck beard though. Very fine line.
Yes, it is not a neck beard. That is the dangerous line. Well, the parts of it are starting to get down there. They're the beginnings of a there's neck tufts. It's not a proper neck beard. How about we tell the fine patient people what we're talking about this week, which is
my facial hair.
We're gonna be talking about imbuing weapons. Specifically in Orun. But before we get into that, Carter, how's your neck beard? Let's just keep on going with this. Or neck tufts.
Sure, yeah. I typically, you know, I'm a big,
I wasn't serious. You are absolutely free to just like move on to other topics if you don't want to talk about your neck tufts.
Yeah, I've been considering, you know, doing more shaving because I typically just trim.
Uh huh.
Because I like the kind of. Stubbled, heavy stubbled
sure.
into, you know, minor beard look.
Well, I think you do it well.
Yeah, exactly. And it couples with the long hair as being a kind of free spirit, hippie.
I definitely, so, did you ever see me when I had long hair?
Yeah, I saw you with the...
We had webcam?
I think when I was back in my fucking college dorm, we did, like, the first time we all were, like, Abe was smoking weed, and, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, which, that was great. Question... Which came first? Did I cut my hair short, or did we get you a webcam for the podcast?
I think the short came first.
That
so the only
crazy.
Time I've seen you with long hair was when you man-bunned it.
You've got to have seen me with a beard, though, right?
The mustache might be as close. I don't know.
You've never seen me with a beard?
Maybe. I can't remember. It's been a long time.
Wow, that's crazy.
You've probably never seen me without.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I think you'd probably look rather dashing without, though. You make me think of one of the Three Musketeers. Like, I feel
really?
Like you totally have that, like, very dashing young energy of...
Is it the hair? Is this the mustache?
Swashbuckling. It's something about your face shape. I'm not really sure. Yeah. Something... Mildly,
I don't have any French
Spanish
ancestry.
Or something. I don't know.
Well, the Three Musketeers weren't Spanish; they're French.
Right, they weren't. Who am I thinking of?
I don't know.
Isn't there like some Spanish swordsman?
Some sort of
not Zorro. I'm not thinking of Zorro. I'm thinking of like
I thought
a very
Zorro was Italian. He was Spanish.
Charismatic. Wait, Zorro was Italian?
I thought he was Italian. He might be Spanish.
You might be right on that. What do I know?
Zorro.
I've like lost track of which of my like white male rage characters, you know, is doing what.
He was Spanish.
Oh, he was Spanish. I thought so.
Yeah,
because I used to watch the Zorro show when I was a kid.
Yeah, he was Spanish. Okay.
They had a TV show from like the 40s or something. It was pretty good.
Yeah, I don't feel like I don't have the Ezio energy for the Italian swordsman. I don't have that.
No, no, no. I think it's a different energy. I think it's there's a sharp wittiness that, like, Ezio's he is witty, but he's languid in his
braggadocious.
Yes, it's definitely much more like a relaxed, cool kind of witty versus sort of the ha 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 that you would have.
I'm like the swashbuckler in 5e has the best like fucking titles for his abilities.
Oh really?
Yeah, here.
There's like the dancing something like blade dancing or I don't
here.
Know. I don't
remember. Also, have you seen the new 5e stuff what they're doing with the
Wild Mount?
No, the hashtag BLM stuff.
No, what are they doing with it?
Oh, they're doing some interesting stuff. They want to like revamp the like focus on drow and like orcs as like the bad boys. Which they've done a little bit with like Eberron and West and Wildemount.
But they want to do it specifically in the world of Forgotten Realms.
Yeah, though I'm not certain if they're gonna. They might do that. Wait for that for 6th edition. But we'll see.
6th edition? Have they been talking about it?
I don't think they've been talking about 6th edition.
I don't know if we need a 6th edition. I mean, really? At least for a little while. If we can have a 6th edition, but I think it's like I don't imagine it's going to be as drastic of a change from, like, so much works in 5th edition that I wouldn't want them to get rid of.
Good.
Like,
I
all the advantage, disadvantage stuff, the way ability scores are calculated and proficiency bonuses. I mean, like, all that stuff, the skill list is so much smaller. I think there's, what, 26 skills or something? It might be less than that. It might be, like, closer to 17.
Are you ready?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so they get fancy footwork, which, you know, that's pretty good. Mm-hmm. They get rakish audacity.
You mean rakish audacity? Like a rake?
Rakish?
Like a rake is like a very suave, like, I don't know. Like, I would say probably people in Great Gatsby would be considered, like, there were some rakes in that.
I will give you the rake, book. Sure. But I don't necessarily trust your pronunciation, Frank. We've discussed this before.
Okay.
And then panache.
Yeah. One. Right.
Having so very good.
Panache.
Very good. So maybe I'm some sort of panacheous rake.
Hey, what's a swashbuckler? Why do they call him a swashbuckler?
They buckle their swashes, obviously. I've gone
back to the Connery well.
I've gone Dutch Connerish.
So curry.
Hey, Frank, I think this is a diatribe enough. I'm doing well. My beard is doing well. I may need to shave a little bit off the bottom. But how are you doing, Frank?
I'm doing okay. Into
buckling the swash of Dutch Connery.
How am I doing? I don't know. Just kind of hanging in there. You know, the whole...
Loose in the wind? Flapping?
Yeah, my dick's just sort of flapping in the wind. You know, relaxed. No, it's been nice to just, like... It really is just like settling into life.
And a new
I don't know, still adjusting to a new city and stuff, and just everything about COVID and the way that it has changed, you know, what this move would have been otherwise. And I don't know, it's just adjusting. So, yeah, life is good though. Enjoying Monster Hunter, enjoying spending time with my girlfriend. It's weird. Is it weird to anybody else to call somebody that you live with your girlfriend / boyfriend? I feel like. Partner might just be the better word at that point. I feel like a girlfriend is somebody that you date that you don't live with.
Well, Frank, I've never lived with someone who I was dating, so I don't know.
I don't know. Anyways,
I'm just
whatever.
A young boy, Frank.
Just a small town boy? Wait, no, just a country... What is it?
Just a small town girl living alone. Just a country boy.
Country boy?
Okay.
From something South Detroit? City boy. He's a city boy from South Detroit.
City boy.
Living in South Detroit.
They took the midnight
train going anywhere.
I saw Journey in concert, by the way. I saw Journey in concert.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, they were opened by Heart and Cheap Trick.
Heart and Cheap Trick?
Yeah, you don't know about Cheap Trick?
No, I don't know.
They
who
did
that...
Surrender.
I don't know who Cheap.
You don't know Surrender? Like, surrender, and don't give yourself away. You don't know that song? Wow.
I don't know if any song sounds like that. But
wow. Wow. Okay, let's end the podcast here. Fuck off, Frank. Future Frank, you should apologize to Future Carter right now.
Maybe I'll drop in an honest apology here.
There we go.
Well, but, only you know, Future Hart. Frank knows. Only Future Frank in the audience knows.
Do you know Hart? Barracuda?
Nope.
Magic Man?
Magic Man, Barracuda? I know. Magic Man.
But you don't know Barracuda?
No. Wow. When are they from?
Hart? I think 80s?
Oh, okay. So Gen X music is what you're saying.
Hart is, let's see, they're formed in 1970.
Uh-huh.
In Seattle.
When was Barracuda formed?
What?
When was Barracuda formed?
When was Barracuda formed? Barracuda was their second studio album in 1977.
Okay, Gen X as well. What about Hart?
What do you mean? I said Hart.
Oh, what was the other one? Magic Man. When was Magic Man formed? Was that the 80s?
Let's check. Magic. 1976.
So also Gen X. Okay, so anyways, I think I've proved my point here. Why would I be listening to music that's not from my era? Look, okay, to be clear, I do now, but when I was growing up, I didn't have access to any of that music. That's not the albums I was buying. I was buying angsty shit rock from the, you know, the mid-thousands. Nowadays, on Apple Music, like, I'm going through just the pop hits year by year.
I mean, what the fuck do you... How did I get access to this music? Frank, where did
you... Your parents? I don't know.
Fucking
my
shit.
Parents, my mom listened to Ella Fitzgerald and The what? Temptations. So,
oh, The Temptations are great. I don't know the Ella Fitzgerald.
The Temptations is fucking fantastic. Like, yeah. Look, I didn't miss out on musical experiences when I was a kid. They were just a very specific kind of musical experience.
All right, well, you need to go and you need to listen to some. Don't listen to Cheap Trick. They're not that great. They're also kind of assholes. But listen to Hart. Barracuda is fucking great. Alone, another great Hart song.
When I get to the pop hits of the 80s, I'm sure I will very much
enjoy.
Well,
they're 76 and 75. So they're
okay,
70.
Well, then when I get to 75, 76, we should have
a... When did you start from fucking 1880, Frank? When did you start?
Frank is going to have a... Future Frank is going to have a hard time sifting through what of this to actually keep in the intro.
Yeah, fuck Whoa. You, Future Frank. Listen to some music.
Oh, God. Okay, well, so yes, I guess Future Frank will have to listen to some music. Past Frank is listening. Hey, I'm on 1970 now.
I finished
through the 60s portfolio and picked up some fantastic
hits. Did you
hits.
Listen to any 50s?
What?
Dion? Runaround Sue?
Those are both from the 60s.
They are? Really?
Yeah,
Dion
like Ruby, 60s? Ruby, you know, hey, Ruby, Ruby, something, something. I believe that is... 66, 65.
Holy fucking shit, Dion's still alive? He's 80.
I mean, Run Around Sue, I think you're right. I think is in the late 50s. But
okay, so Dion was with the Belmonts from 57 to 60, and then he was solo from 60 to 64.
So really what you're talking about is all of Dion's hits then were in the 60s.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I will ignore that poke at the Belmonts because it's probably justified.
Oh, I don't know anything about the Belmonts. That wasn't an intentional poke. But it sounds like it was very justified, so I'll take it. Yep. Should we start the podcast again for real this time?
Welcome to Halloween.
No, it's not. Oh, man. All right. Hey, shit tier, embrace it, right?
Yep.
Okay. All right. So, yeah. So we were, but yeah, you know, I think one of the things that I like the most about music is just how personal it is. You know, everybody has different tastes. Everybody has a different connection to the music. And in a way, when you listen to the music, the music listens to you. You hear yourself in it. You connect to it and you make it yours. And it's so funny that we were talking about that because that's so much related to what we're talking about this episode. Whoa. Crazy. I'm just doing like my mind is blown equivalent of a belly dance over here.
Yep.
Okay. So this week we're going to be talking about imbuing, I mean, I would say weapons and armor. Imbuing, maybe just even imbuing objects. Gear. We'll call it gear for now.
Gear.
Imbuing gear in the world of Halume. specifically in Orun. And so what is this? What are we talking about? I'll give you the premise, and then maybe I think we should talk about where we want to begin this.
Sure.
So I had this idea for Orun, which was a lot of what I think makes Orun an interesting place, and what we've been exploring so far is the relationship between the community and the individual. There's several different conflicts or tensions that are going on, but that's one of the big ones. Like, there's also obviously, you know, wild versus not really civility. I forget what we called it, but the difference between, there's a little order in case. Anyways, but so one of the big things is the difference between, or the how the individual relates to the community or connects to the community. And as with just about everything that we do in Helame, in the Lorekeepers, we take those concepts and explore them through the use of either mechanics or you know, actual world building elements. And so I was kind of thinking about how you portray that there's a thingness, there's this X factor that a lot of different these sources that we're using, like My Hero Academia and even Attack on Titan and what was the other one? Ruby and even Monster Hunter. They all have this. There's a focus in a lot of them with about really interesting. Well, maybe not My Hero Academia, but there's a different connection there. But like the contraption side of things, like in Ruby, they have these weird morphing weapons, or not even morphing, because morphing implies that it's like kind of esoteric, but it's actually like you can hear like the clicking and shifting of things around in a weapon as it like changes shape, like it's transforming, like somebody's, you know, doing some sort of cool mechanism. Or in Monster Hunter, they have all this weird ingenuity with the way that their entire society is put together. And there's some just bizarre, very silly weapons like the switch axe or the gun lance or whatever. And then even in an Attack on Titan, one of the things I really enjoy about the world building of that show is that everyone's Spider-Man. Like, there's an entire army of Spider-Mans. And I don't really know how they decided that was the way to fight giants, but I think it's a really cool idea. For those of you who aren't aware, basically what happens in Attack on Titan is they have the ability to sort of fire out these cables that can stick into things, and they use those and then pull themselves along the cables, and they use those to like mount these massive, you know, 30, 40 foot tall humanoids to take them down that attack their home. As this all relates then to, sorry, go ahead.
It's pretty succinct. I like that.
Yeah. As this all relates to My Hero Academia and then back into Orun, is that each one of these situations, there's an expression of individualism when it's done well through the equipment that the person is using. In Monster Hunter, it's quite literally like when you are playing it as a gamer or as a player, there is an expression of the self in what kind of weapon you want to use. What's the strategy of the weapon? The gear that you use might focus on being good at different things or where your priorities lie. And that's true with a lot of video games, but it really comes out in Monster Hunter because the weapons have so much character. And even the armor, too, to some extent, is, I mean, the armor sets are gorgeous. Of course, they have character, but in Ruby and in My Hero Academia and in even Attack on Titan, when everybody is very, like, not militant, what's the word? Like, they're regimented, you know, they are trained to be a certain way. In each of those situations, there is still an emphasis in that storytelling on the individual. And the fact that a team is not comprised of clones, it's comprised of very, very unique people. So as this relates to Orun, I had been thinking about how do you express that? How do you draw that out and make that something that's not just a narrative element, but in good world building, that stuff comes out in narratives and kind of can't help but bleed through, but also because you're setting yourself up for success, that's the intent. To have these tools, but then also in, you know, the role-playing game side of it, when you comply those with mechanics, then you have a way of expressing this in the literal activity of what you're doing. So I don't know if we necessarily needed to get into the mechanics side of things today. But essentially, what imbuing is, or what my idea of it was that because of the strange things that are happening in Orun, especially with how it relates to magic and how it relates to the self and spirits, and that spirits don't really, they don't really pass on to the Aetherium in the same way, there might be something, I'd like to see what we can do with it, but there might be something with the idea that items or weapons or things that you use more frequently, you start to create an affinity with that thing, and it starts to take on a portion of your personality, your persona. Like, let's say it's a bone sword, and it just starts out as a very simple bone sword. You know, it's carved along the edge. It maybe even has, you know, some nickel or something that has been, you know, trued on the edge to make it sharper or something, or more resilient, if that's necessary. And you might wake up one day after some significant battle or something, and a part of its character has, like, literally the bone has become more rigid in a certain way, or, like, I don't know, there's not like necessarily just like spikes or whatever, but there might be something that shifts or changes about the shape of the weapon itself, and you are literally building this connection with it. And that could be true for armor, it could be true for items that you use regularly, maybe there's like a special, it's kind of, yeah, evolving weaponry, evolving gear, as you put it. So that was kind of the idea. I don't know what you think of all that, Carter, with all that in mind, what do you think would be a good place to begin with this?
I think maybe an interesting question is, are these weapons all kind of magically tethered to their user in a similar way, or is it a wide variety of ways that this kind of magical tethering happens? Is a magical tether necessary, a kind of soul bond?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's an interesting place to explore.
Yeah, I think there's probably a threshold. I think it gets to a certain point where there's almost like a no turning back, and it doesn't count against something that you're attuned to, but nobody else can pick up a weapon, or if they do, they have disadvantage on attacks or something like that. Like the weapon seeks out the user if you've been. I mean, and in a gamified terms, we could just say that your weapons level up with you. I put that in air quotes. Like, there's something that happens when you level up, and if you've been using a weapon for the majority of fights since you leveled or something like that, I don't know, some way of tracking that, then it might gain a minor enchantment or something like that. As far as in the world building of Halume, of like what's actually happening in Orun, I think that there's a magical bond of some kind. I think that we'll just start with, we've talked about like oaths and vows and stuff like that. I think it's part of that same tree somewhere along the lines. I don't know if it's... Go ahead.
And in 5th edition, mm-hmm. good old Eldritch Knights bond their weapons to them.
They have like a hex ritual. Blade, right?
No. They can bond... Yeah, and then they can...
Eldritch Knights, yes.
They get Mjolnir, where they can throw it and they can recall it and all mm-hmm. that stuff.
Right.
So, but you don't want to go so far with, like, Thor's hammer Mjolnir by having it to where only he can pick it up.
Yeah, well, I think that that does happen, but that's the stuff of legends. And I think it's rightfully should stay there, is you do get to a point where weapons have a unique connection to their user, but it's because of years of history. You know, it'd be like 10 plus levels of using just a specific weapon or something like that.
All right, Frank. So now I want to introduce an idea that I think you'll like, which is coming from two places. One is coming from Thor and the, you know, big Marvel Thor, where within the first film we have Odin take away his powers and then shout at the hammer, "You have power, Thor." Who does that, right? So whoever holds the hammer,
man, you do an incredible Anthony Hopkins. That was moving. I feel.
Yeah.
Whew.
He, whoever like gets the hammer, can have the power of Thor, right? So like mm-hmm. When you bond with the hammer, if you're quote unquote worthy,
mm-hmm.
which the hammer deems, you receive great strength. I like that idea. That's cool.
Yeah,
especially for like hyper legendary stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is, which is coming from a similar place. Do you remember Critical Role, Frank?
Yes, I do.
First season. First campaign.
Just give a heads up if you're going to do any spoilers.
I'm going to do a spoiler.
Okay.
When Vaxeldon gets the locket. Is it? I think it's Vax that gets the locket.
Or which
is it
locket? Vax? Are you talking about for Trinket?
Well, the thing that gets absorbed. It absorbs creatures. That saved...
I don't know who got it, but they definitely gave it to Vax.
Okay. So, but inside the locket, it was an artifact of the Raven Queen. Inside it was a wolf.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and the wolf, like, wasn't friends with them because it was, you know, the friend of old Raven Queen dude.
Oh, the previous champion of the Raven
Queen. Yeah, but it eventually became friends and lent its strength. Its name was like Carcadon or some bullshit.
Yeah, I remember it became like sort of the protector of Whitestone, or like was prowling out in the woods and shit.
And so I like to think of that kind of relationship, along with like Thor's hammer's relationship, where it's like the weapon, when its wielder is gone or when its wielder is retired, can choose a successor. Because the weapon doesn't de-level. So right. Like either the weapon or the wielder themselves can choose a successor to like gain the strength of the weapon. That's a cool idea.
And also what could be cool about that is you get a situation where now we have two categories of weaponry / gear. One that is the enchantments or higher level abilities that it unlocks are locked but known. Like, as you gain in levels, you know what this thing is capable of, because this is what the previous user, or maybe you do Arcana checks or whatever to succeed in, like, knowing the lore of this weapon or something. And so it's static, and it's not going to change. Maybe you get to those higher things faster, but they're not all to your liking. Whereas a weapon that you grow a bond with will be more specifically attuned to things like maybe you get to choose as it unlocks, but from like a short list. And it gives you access to very specific things. I think that that's like a good play on it because it takes longer, but then you're actually forging a unique relationship, a never before had relationship with the weapon.
I like this idea of picking.
That's a good comparison, though.
I like that.
Sorry, what'd you say?
I like the idea of picking from a schist. I like that.
Oh, God. Schist, really? Wouldn't it be schlist?
It could be schlist.
I think schlist is pretty good.
All right.
As far as Badman Toes are concerned.
Cannon.
Oh, it's like slipping further away. I don't know. I don't know if I remember what I was going to talk about. But
all right, well, let's...
Oh,
so obviously,
go ahead.
Not every weapon has this.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be a special kind of weapon you forged a bond with, and forging a bond is like it's a big deal. It's got to be a certain kind of magical weapon, it has to have a certain kind of enchantment.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's baseline. Like, you don't see fucking, you don't forge a relationship with your fucking fork.
No, I mean, and I think this is a thing that even Outriders don't experience for a while. Like, I like that there's a potential for a narrative where an Outrider survives a few battles with something, they may actually go their whole life without feeling like bonded to one of their weapons or like that there's an imbuing in it. It might be years and they never really feel comfortable with it because that you have to connect with the thing. You have to actually like associate with it. There needs to be something on a instinctual level where there's almost like this understanding with this unifying with your gear. And if they don't, then they might just hop from weapon to weapon their entire life. I also think it would be really interesting to see if people are trying to force those bonds. Like maybe it can be done and there's like a sense of association, but it's almost like an arranged marriage where it is something that you have to, if there's going to be love there, you have to find it and grow into it. And right now you're bonded more like I feel like there's an equivalent in, you could even pull some of Wheel of Time lore into this. I'm thinking of something, right? There's obviously there's the bonds between the Aes Sedai and their warders.
Warders, yeah.
But I think, because sometimes those bonds aren't always taken with the other person's consent. Which is a pretty fucked up thing. Like in the world of Wheel of Time, that's like the equivalent of like being assaulted, like sexually assaulted, or not even sexually assaulted, like being forced into a marriage with somebody that you don't want. I think it's potentially possible to do this in the world of Orun. I think it's looked down upon. I think you need a shaman or somebody of high enough power who is who has a knowledge of your ancestral line. I think they probably draw on your familial. Ooh, this could actually create for some really interesting. I think there's something there because.
What, their granddad embodies the weapon?
Or it was their grandfather's, and then the daughter picks it up, who's like the mother of the character, and then tries to pass it on to them, and they just don't connect with it at all and try and force it. And so they have the shaman like basically chain this bond to them. And it is always like trying to wriggle out. You know, it's never really theirs. I think that could be a really interesting thing to explore, especially because you have an opportunity to explore how that relates to the real world. There could be families of outriders who it is sort of their expected honor that they all become outriders. That is the honor of their family. If that's the case, then they're like forcing these weapons on the children or whatever. Or the children are forcing it. And you get really just these fucked up family, dynasties or whatever of, I don't know, just, yeah, really immoral stuff going on. And that's even just to like weapons and stuff. But I think it can screw with the soul. I think it twists the soul weirdly. So we have some like really interesting, some really fertile ideas that we can use here. What do you think is the impetus as it relates to Orun? Why is this happening in Orun and not Everast? Why is this something that's like really unique there? And we can pin that if you had something else. We can pin that and come back to it.
No, I think that is, I'm worried about this, Frank, because I think this is going to, the relationship between why this happens on Orun and a kind of thing you're giving to the weapons, you seem to be giving them a side of intelligence or some sort of personhood. You're saying, mm-hmm. like, it would be wrong for them to be chained to someone they didn't want to be chained to. So they have to want things.
They kind of have to choose each other.
Yeah, they have to be able to be choosers, which means they have to have intelligence. So these weapons now are intelligent weapons.
Mm-hmm. Or, I don't know if they're intelligent, but I think that they have a will in the same way that, like, the Animus have a will. The Animus aren't necessarily conscious in the way that we think of consciousness, but they do have an awareness. And I think that these weapons might have something similar. Anyway, sorry, but you're going somewhere with this, and I think it sounds like...
I'm going to say I'm worried, because our metaphysics are legendarily ham-fisted.
Uh-huh.
So, I don't know if you're going to try to give these weapons souls, or what you're going to do here. I don't know what to do.
I think that might be the final... sort of like the final thing that happens. I think that that's like the legends are the legends because maybe the land itself has been awoken within the weapon or something like that. Like they're drawing on the concordance, like the Concordia with the wild gods or something. Also, we definitely should talk about the wild gods versus the Shorin more. I mean, Future Frank put this down as like an episode idea because I think I'm kind of wondering if there's a conflict there and some havens actually ally with one or the other or something like that. I'm kind of curious. I feel like we can do something with that. Anyways, as it relates, though, to the wild gods, I don't know, or doesn't relate to the wild gods. I think that this having a souled weapon, I still want to be a unique and uncommon thing, like something with a soul or like a mind and a consciousness. I want to be something that happens even still, just in the legends. Like, there are probably lots of stories, like, you know, 20 plus stories that, you know, people share of, like, either local or, you know, continent spanning heroes that, or villains who picked up weapons and through their connection, through their cohesion, you know, did impossible feats. But I think that that's still... like, if this was a leveling thing, a weapon could max out at level 10 or something like that, and this would be level 10. Or maybe level 5. You know, that way you could do it up to like 4 different times or something.
All right, Frank. I think I have an idea for why it happens in a room and nowhere else.
Okay, yeah.
It's due to the living essence. So maybe do some sort of hashtag.
Gaia?
Nope, nope.
What are you trying to do here?
What's our divide between magic and then anima? So
oh,
maybe
yeah.
It's the anima, but basically, because the weapons are made from, like, bone and sinew, that enables them to receive this kind of magical bullshit better.
Oh, I like that. I like that quite a bit.
Even the few metal weapons, or the few weapons with metal bits, they still have to have, like, a core of bone or, you know,
flesh
bit.
I actually really like that idea. That makes a lot of sense. Also, holy shit, I had kind of a brain explosion of something that could be really fun and enriching for Orun. I'll get there in a second. I think that you're right. Maybe it is... Oh, have you ever read... Oh, what is it? Something... It is a Cormac McCarthy book. It's about horses.
No. I've not read any Cormac McCarthy book about horses.
I think it's called All the Pretty Horses. It's a very good book. He writes these books, like these cowboy books, westerns. And All the Pretty Horses, the only thing that I'm drawing from this is that the main character sitting around a campfire at one point and listening to these very old hair, not ranchers, I guess, yeah, cowboys, who are talking about horses and like kind of how beautiful horses are and how incredible they are. And the thing, it's like very raw and just very like, there's a sense of like communion and connection with the animal that, I don't know, is really appealing. You know, is where my brain was going with this, but the reason why I bring it up is because he just talks about, it's just like a random thing that I think could be fun, but that he believes that all horses have one soul. They have one soul that they share, or like that the soul of the horse, you can feel it in a herd or whatever you call like a, you know, a group of horses, or in one. I don't remember why that was significant, but it stood out to me, in at least in this situation, because there are literally like guardian spirits or guiding spirits for like the different animal presences. And maybe there is quite literally like different creatures. I don't know. We could go down that route where they like share a spirit, or maybe you're awakening one of like the ancestral spirits of this like type of animal or something. But I think that connecting to, oh, hey, this is maybe what it is. I think I just got it. Okay, so animals only have anima, right? They don't actually have souls?
Yep.
But we know that anima and souls, the thing that they create when they are joined together is ki, or like when there is a union between the two. Maybe what's happening is it is literally like unleashing ki energy, or it is that communion of connecting with the creature. It is a person communing with them and being able to create that bond. It's like a sort of like when you are connected with it, then there is this development of special energies, the manifestation of their soul or of their identity, their creaturehood, that is manifesting, that is coming out in the way that the weapon is used, in the way that people interact with each other and stuff. Might be something like that. Did that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, instead of bonding with the anima within yourself, you're bonding with the anima of another creature. With the you're bonding with the anima of another creature.
You went a little bit Kennedy.
Yeah, I was trying to be Australian there. Did not work out very well, huh?
You were more Bastonian.
I don't know what that was. I don't know. What do you think of that idea, though? I mean, because that also opens the door thinking about, like, rangers and their creatures. Like, maybe this key bond, the anima and the soul, is happening in more places than just monks, and they just, and people aren't really realizing that that's what that is. But in Orun, it comes out in this very specific way because the way that the land is awake and aware that it isn't in other places.
Yeah, I think there's several ways we can go with this. I like your way with key. I like that. We could try to pull in a little bit more of the oversoul business. Have you ever read any Ralph Waldo Emerson?
No. What is he, fiction writer, or is he a philosopher?
He was a transcendentalist.
Oh, okay.
He's an American transcendentalist.
What remind me, what is transcendentalism? I feel like that was something I learned about in
English.
Christianity.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Do you know Walden with Henry David Thoreau?
Sure.
Yeah, Henry David Thoreau was like a student of Emerson, or they were friends.
Is it related to the sublime?
I don't know what the sublime is, Frank.
We've talked about this before, but like the pastoral.
Yeah, I think they're a band, movement. Actually.
The sublime movement was this idea of, it was like this Eden-like relationship between man, humankind, and its creator, God, and this idea that nature is at its greatest when it is governed and cultivated, like pruned by mankind. I would say humankind, but really the sublime was more about mankind. Anyways, just tell me what transcendentalism is. I don't want to distract you.
Straight from Google's mouth.
Okay.
Wikipedia's mouth. Transcendentalism is a philosophical movement that developed in the late 1820s and 30s in the United States. A core belief is the inherent goodness of people and nature, and while society and its institution have been corrupted by the purity of the individual, people are at their best when they're truly self-reliant and independent.
Yeah, Walden would say that. Thoreau would say that. That totally tracks.
Yeah. And then Waldo...
It's a really nice sentiment, but I absolutely disagree with it. I think it is so reductive. But still, I think that there's stuff in it that we can use. And that, I mean, also that we can use as people, but we can specifically use as world building.
Well, I was going to continue. We're talking about Ralph Waldo Emerson.
Okay, yeah, so tell me about him and how this relates.
So, he had this idea called the Oversoul, which I have a friend who actually shares this kind of idea, oddly enough, about metaphysics, which is, when you die, your soul goes to the Oversoul, which is a conglomeration of all dead human souls.
Hmm.
And then a new soul, when this new soul is formed, it gets formed out of this Oversoul and then comes down into the body of a newborn. Or, I don't know when, I'm not going to get into the abortion debate about that. It comes down at some point and
at the moment that it comes out of the mom's vagina. And not a moment before.
It's a moment of conception.
Okay, sure.
There we go.
At some point, during the gestation of the child, when it becomes a creature,
when the soul pops in.
Yeah, it starts to develop within them. It's a really interesting concept, I think.
So you could do something with horses with that, where there's an over-horse soul.
Over-horse soul, oh boy. Yeah. So
that embodies each of the horse's hoarseness. Or you could go Platonic, which is the other thing I was going to go for, where there's a form of the horse, the true embodiment of all hoarseness.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't actually exist, except, or maybe it's in the Ethereum.
Mm-hmm.
The true horse, the trorse.
The pattern for the horse?
The form of the horse, Frank.
Would it be form or pattern?
It would be form.
Oh man, we've talked about this before, but the idea of, because we've never really gotten into this, but the gloom, you know, the gloom. Have we really talked about the gloom?
You have to remind me. I think we talked about it, but I forgot.
Here, I'll just jump to where it is in the record of the Lorekeeper, because this came out of one of my players is a gloom stalker, and I started to use it as more than that. So it's under paradimensionality. It's not really a proper dimension, but people categorize it as that. The gloom is a given name to redacted that exists in step with Halime. The gloom was named by the lore keepers of Avon Tertius, who studied the abilities of some whim weavers who seemed to fade from reality entirely. When these individuals returned, they would speak of glimpsing redacted, half the time seeming to witness redacted. I'll fill in a couple of these for y'all. No scholar in record has been able to determine what exactly the gloom is, and the ranks of the lore keepers still debate this topic. The gloom is, in truth, not technically a place or even a collection of places, but rather is redacted. A capable gloomstalker may be able to step into dozens, even hundreds of these redacted. Though further they attempt to stalk from redacted, the more difficult it is. Without getting into the super specifics, it was something that I envisioned as, this is... If you look at any made object as the result of a construction, you know, we talk about the architect creating things in the world of Halume, and that like all of that form came from somewhere, then the gloom is, in its essence, that the gloom is essentially the pattern from which those things are made. So it is the reference point that all things... So if primordium is like the stockpile, it's where you get the raw material, the stuffness to make stuff in reality from. The gloom is how that assembly goes together. It's like the record of that information. When we've talked about the language of the dead in the past, it's been forever since we talked about it, but essentially it is the portion of magic that has been cut off from the living so that they cannot interact with it. Because it's like the programming, it's kind of like the coding language of the universe. It is how the universe goes together. That cosmic language, the language of the dead, is applied to the gloom to create the patterns, or to tell the patterns to draw the material from the primordium, all of that being assembled into a real physical object. So it's like those three parts, the execution of the command, the pattern from which it's drawing how the assembly goes together, and the raw material are the things that make reality what they are in the materium. And the gloom is sort of a third of that. So the gloom can also be used to speculate and sort of project what might happen in the future. It's something that diviners use occasionally in the arcane fields. As this relates to Orun, I completely lost how we ended up here.
Because I was talking about form, and I was talking about the form of the horse.
Oh, right. So maybe there has something to do with the way, the pattern of anima. Like, there's the pattern of the horse, if you will. Or I don't know if that exists in the gloom, or if the gloom is entirely for inanimate objects. But actually, I think we know all things have anima in them, right? Creatures have much more anima, but all things do have anima on some level. Is it maybe just a complexity thing? Maybe the pattern of the horse does exist within the gloom.
I think it does. I think that all things have form, anima, you know. It's hard to do this kind of thing because philosophy form has a very different kind of idea behind it, but to put to merge them into Halumian and my philosophical brain
right.
would be something along the lines of the form of like a person is not including the soul, but rather just like the shape and the basic things that it has, like muscles and bones.
Okay.
All that. The idea of where that is and how it's supposed to work is the form. And then the actual stuff is the matter, and the matter would be the anima.
So maybe we come back around to that one, because it is an intriguing concept, but maybe anima, because we know, according to our own mythology, though, like, we know that the primordium is, like, pure anima, right?
Yeah.
It's like, pure animating force, the idea of structures and, you know, we talk about how elementals have instinct. They have a highly, highly complex instinct that gives them incredibly advanced societal, or the appearance of incredibly advanced societal structures and things. And also, who's to say, you know, you can kind of get into a Westworld thing there of whether that's actually, you know, free will or not, or whether
everyone's an elemental.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, spoilers for season 3 of Westworld. Everyone's an elemental. but like, yeah, so I think we can pin that for now. I don't really know how anima relates to the gloom. I am curious if that means a person's soul is created out of a template and there's iterations on it, or like how it's sieved into reality alters the person's like nature, and if there is an oversoul, and whether that would be in the primordium, or how that maybe the way that the language of the dead weaves together, each stitches together, each person is what makes a soul unique, and there is like a raw material of soulness that exists somewhere. I would imagine that's in the repository of the Primordium. I'm not really sure how the pattern would go into that, but anyways, like, so the reason, getting all that back to imbuing weapons, and specifically the use of the word, I mean, maybe imbuing might be the wrong term. It seems like we're talking more about bonding. I think imbuing might be when you sort of force that bond. I think that's go ahead.
Imbuing might be the first step, which is creation of a weapon able to receive a bond or initiate a bond.
Yeah, you know what? It might be. So I think that there's a synthetic aspect where you can either, the bond is either discovered or it's synthesized. And maybe, oh, dude, maybe there's some sort of sharding that is going on. It's like a non-permanent sharding. In the difference, this is cool. Because the vampires, they shard, right? Sharding, just as a reminder for people, if they don't remember here, I'll jump back to the explanation.
It's not a sex thing.
This is why we have this. Oh, I don't have it listed here. But, okay, here we go. Vampirism is the act of using another creature's soul as a power source for accessing magic. The process of doing so is imperfect, and transferring magical energy from one person to another leaves a mark on the vampire. This process is known as sharding. So basically it is when a person is using sanguine magic, blood magic, they are taking a sliver of that person's soul and they're applying it to themselves. And then what happens is, like, older vampires, the patriarchs and matriarchs, typically start to get corrupted by this, right? Because they become pieces, chaotic pieces of other people's soul stitched into their own. It's kind of like a Horcrux thing. Within a rune, I'm kind of wondering if what imbuing is it is taking a shard of your own soul through a ritual by a shaman or whatever and placing it into the weapon. And it's probably a painful process. And Carter's slowly raising his thumb up. Using our own world building to our advantage, you know, using our past shit, man, you know, stitching it together. And so, you know, maybe this is something. Do you have an idea?
I have an idea, but it's for vampires, Frank.
No, that's fine. You just hold on to it for just a second. I'll just finish what I'm saying quickly because I want to hear it. So maybe what is happening, I think that this is what is happening, is either you discover a bond because you actually connect with the thing, or the person is trying to force it on the weapon. And so the way of doing that is you imbue, you take a shard of yourself, put it in the weapon. It's an incomplete fit. And as a result, the mechanical side of this within like D&D could be that it maxes out at a much lower level. So it only maxes out at like level 3 or 4, because really you're not actually connecting necessarily with something in the creature. You're connecting with yourself in it, and you're using them as a mirror. You know, it's like Justin Timberlake's song, you know, it's like you're a mirror seeing the other half of me or whatever, which I'm only partially using as a joke, because I think that a problem I've always had with that song is if you're only ever seeing yourself in another person, then the thing that you're connecting with is not that person. You're connecting with yourself and you're using them to do it, which is an incomplete bond. It's not like actually a true connection or communion with that other being. Okay, so that was my idea with how imbuing is working. What was your idea?
So first I want to say that what you're describing is a problem with platonic love, actually.
Oh.
It's similar, because platonic love is...
I kind of remember someone, Plato, talking about this.
You love someone not for anything that they are, but for the qualities they share with the good. So you don't actually love them, you love the things that are in them that represent the good.
Oh. You're not actually connecting with them.
Yeah, or you're connecting with them only insofar as they connect with the good.
And so Plato would say it's with the good, not with yourself? Because is it that you're seeing the good in yourself? No, okay, I see what you're saying. So you're saying specifically it is you like them because they are a benevolent good person.
Yes.
Or they have benevolent attributes that you appreciate about them.
Yeah, but this also applies to beauty.
Okay.
So, like, you love someone's beauty because they represent a part of the beautiful, which is also, right? The beautiful is good, and only insofar as the beautiful participates in goodness.
Yeah. That's pretty fucking profound. I mean, like, it's very simple and straightforward, but I appreciate, like, the spotlight on that because it totally tracks.
But
like,
critics of platonic love will often say, well, you don't actually love the person, you just love the good. I'm probably fine with saying, yep, that's fine.
Yeah.
But some people are upset with that. And it comes...
I feel like...
That actually comes about...
Sorry, go ahead.
That actually comes about with Christian love as well.
Mm-hmm.
Another problem is because with Christian love, you're supposed to love everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Insofar as they are a person or God's creation or what have you. That's
right.
Christian love. But you don't actually love them for who they are. You love them for the fact that they are a creation of God, not for the person that they are. So you have this very low-level love that doesn't actually... So you don't actually love them. You just love them only insofar as they are a creation of God.
That's a really good... I was literally going to bring up the fact that I think C.S. Lewis actually talks about platonic love and this very concept. I think he brings up the fact that there is a way out there. I don't remember specifically what it is, but he definitely condemns Christians who think that it is their sole duty to love people because they're God's creation versus actually loving God's creation for being what it is, not for who made it. And I think he has some really insightful things about that if you're into, you know, Christian theology or whatever.
I would just call it philosophy of love.
Yeah, just the philosophy of love, which is...
I'm a big fan.
It's the philosophy of love. Anyways. All right,
but the vampire thing.
Yes, vampire thing.
I think the vampires have taken a lesson from the lich. You ready for this?
Okay, sure.
So liches have phylacteries so that when their physical form dies, they don't actually die. They just get reformed because their soul's in a phylactery.
Right. And we've actually, I think, talked about this connection before in the past, but it sounds like you're adding a new dimension.
New dimension, vampires of the new age vampires, the smart ones, have gotten around sharding by having a medium.
A medium?
Yes. So they have a phylactery-like object that they use to cast or to channel blood magic through. And so the shard gets embedded of the person's soul, gets embedded in the medium and not in the vampire.
Oh, shit. And then it becomes like a battery that they draw on.
Yep.
Oh, that's interesting. So they make a bond with this vessel, whatever this vessel is, and then they use more, I'm assuming it's much more complicated magic. It's like literally the technological or magical development of technique over time. They wouldn't have been able to do this during the Sanguine Empire. And they use that whatever that vessel is, connect the shard to it, and then, oh, that's devious. That's very good.
Yes.
I like that.
So, and then this can be a really cool idea with, like, fighting a vampire, is that if you destroy their vessel, they can't use magic. Or they can do so at the risk of sharding.
Yeah. And their, like, bodies are still magically empowered and stuff like that, but it comes at a much greater risk to... They'll also have to create a new vessel, which I'm assuming is not easy. I'm sure it's a much more difficult, like, magical procedure.
Yeah, I would say think similar to, have you seen Full Metal Alchemist, Frank?
I've seen up until the point, I don't know, I've seen like 10, 15 episodes of Brotherhood, specifically.
All right, never mind then. Never mind.
Okay. I'll watch it eventually. I'm working again, so I have lots of hours to just turn on things and you know, not pay too close of attention to them. I was watching Six Underground yesterday at work. That's the one. It's Ryan Reynolds is a billionaire, and they're all ghosts, and it's a Michael Bay movie, and it's just they're ghosts because they faked their deaths so that they could, I don't know, be basically like invisible covert agents and stuff. And they solve it, you know, world injustice through parkour and fucking blowing up.
So they're shadow runners, Frank. They're shadow runners.
Are all shadow runners technically supposed to be dead?
I mean, they don't have an identity in the, like, you know, super company thing. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
You can have like fake IDs, but to be a shadow runner, you can't have an ID. Because otherwise,
it definitely.
You.
It definitely feels like Michael Bay was playing a lot of video games before he made this movie, because it's, by the way, as far as big dumb fun goes, I think that Michael Bay catches a lot of shit. This movie is so fun. It got like a 36 or something on Rotten Tomatoes, but I enjoyed it quite a bit. It's just big and loud and frenetic and explodey and lots of huge set pieces. And when I'm like, you know, not paying too close attention, that's exactly what I'm looking for in a movie.
When you're crossfaded to hell, you're at work, trying to look like you're doing something.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's, yeah, you were talking about Full Metal Alchemist. That's how we ended up there. As far as the vampires thing is concerned, I think that's a really cool idea. I feel like we got some really good stuff out of this episode. I'm probably close to ready to call it, though. I think that there's definitely more here. There's so much more here, but I think it's going to have to be in a revisiting episode later, which is a shame because we're already running pretty damn long. I mean, man, this is going to be a long episode, especially from just all the shit we talked about before we started the
episode. You got to trim the fat. You really got to trim the fat.
I don't know, man. The fat's tasty. It's all juicy. You have some fat, you know? I'll cut some stuff. But yeah, I always leave it at the end anyways. We will do the one and one, but I think there was... Let's just kind of revisit everything we talked about with imbuing, because I think there might have been a couple of loose strands that would be fun to pull on. I'm just trying to remember what they are.
I've got my one, Frank.
You got your one?
Yes.
Okay, well, let's just kind of go through all this again. There's imbuing, but there's also...
Banding.
Bonding is... Imbuing is a way to kind of falsify... Or half legitimize a bond. I don't want to entirely vilify it, because I think sometimes you just need to be connected to a weapon and you don't have a choice. Like, maybe the corruption is riding down on you guys and you need to be able to just start to... It's like, not all relationships are perfect. Sometimes, you know, people benefit from each other mutually, and it's not the greatest thing, you know, but you use each other. I don't know.
I thought imbuing was the creation of a weapon capable of bonding.
Yes. I mean, so yes, it is the creation. But the thing is I think, yes, so not all weapons can be bonded with, but I think that some awaken, even if you don't imbue them. Because I think imbuing is specifically when you're sharding yourself. Like when you are drawing a shard of yourself. So I don't think you have to do that with every weapon. I think that the best and most potent bonds are the ones where people discover them through the weapon and through the use of the weapon. And that is, you don't always have to imbue a weapon to create that bond. I think it's just a way of forcing it. But the other thing that I was going to, I just wanted to, I guess, address by the fact that we didn't address it, which is... One of the things we didn't do was look at all of the ways that you could mechanistically create like a contraption type weapon, you know, things like, you know, handheld crossbows or whatever. One of the things I was interested with was, how do you get the technological tinkeriness of weapons without actually increasing the level of advancement beyond hunter-gatherer society in Orun? And to some extent, I don't know if we really need to worry about that too much, because the conflict of fighting the corruption is so great that it divides people anyways and prevents technologies from being, you know, extending across. But I think part of what I was kind of playing with the idea of was, I wonder if you can bind materials or unique technologies that you discover in the ruins of like giant society or something, and add those to the weapon bond. Like, I'm wondering if there's a way of sort of almost quote unquote socketing in modifiers, you know, the equivalents of like when you're playing a video game that lets you modify your guns. You can like add a sight, or you could add a, you know, whatever that increases your, you know, reload speed or something.
You can add a grip that reduces weapon sway.
Yeah, exactly, shit like that, except more interesting, you know, more creative world buildy stuff. Like, maybe you can add some sort of harpoon you fire, and then it creates like a grappling hook that you can, you know, connect to something, and it's partially magic, partially, you know, engineered, which also potentially other episode to connect with. I think that there's a connection between ancient giant ingenuity and the gnomes, And I don't know what that is yet, but I think it's there. I don't know what the... Because the giants existed long before the Dosumai, and the ancient giant, like, empire, and like, you know, the powers that used to be, I think existed long before the gnomes, but I think there's something there, and I'm looking forward to discovering what that is. What was the other thing, though? Oh, okay, so, yeah, that was pretty much just the gist of it, though, is I think if you are looking for the cool, fun contraptions, I think they're there. We just haven't gotten there yet. I think we need to talk about imbuing first. So,
yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Anyways, sorry. So you had a one. You can go first.
I think with a special enchantment, imagine you had a super dire boar, so a sire boar, if you will, Frank.
I don't hate that. It's a dumb name, and I would never admit to that being where it comes from. But if there is like more powerful than dire creatures, is like a sire bear. Oh, well, so I don't know, because the moment that you realize there's a dire bear. Okay, right, anyways, right. Yes, you have a sire boar.
Yeah, you take the sire boar. If you can fashion its tusks into a spear, you enchant the tusks with a special enchantment. And then, if you were to pierce the heart, the still-beating heart of another sire boar, you can take its animating spirit thing into the weapon, increasing its power.
Oh, I like that. I like that quite a bit. Also, side note, I think when you said enchantment, I should say there are versions of magical enchantments on weapons that maybe encourage them to awaken. Like maybe that's the situation, is like you can imbue it, which is the forceful thing, but there's also like more of something that's like an encouragement. It's not a force. There's no guarantee that a bond will come out of it, but you can sort of make the space fertile for a connection, a bond to be synthesized, like to awaken to the hunter. It could be like the equivalent of breaking a horse. You know, when you like ride it into the ground, there's no guarantee, but if you do break the horse, then it settles and allows the rider to connect with them. You know, some horses still remain very surly after they've been broken, but not all do. So, anyways, I really like that idea, though, of, like, enchanting it, and then you, like, either stab another creature's heart, or there's a way of, like, reconnecting it back to that oversoul, or, you know, whatever that repository of energy is.
That's the idea.
Nice.
Do you have one?
Yeah, I do. Okay, so I pinned this forever ago, and I was, like, really excited about this. Okay, so I've talked before about how there's like basically very little metal in the world of Orun, or like the continent of Orun. Except I think the problem with the metal, maybe this is what it is. The problem with the metal isn't that it's nowhere, it's that it's everywhere. Maybe the issue, the reason why, the part of the reason beyond magical imbuing and all of the other crazy fantasy shit that's going on, part of the reason why animals have enhanced strength and scale and stuff is because the ground is extremely rich in most minerals. Like there's just it's but it's all like ground into the dirt. Like it was maybe volcanic dirt or something that is incredibly fertile with tons and tons and tons of rare, like, Hellumian metals or rare Sidarian metals. And when plants grow, that stuff ends up in their leaves and in their berries and in the, like, bushes and all that stuff. When herbivores eat that and when carnivores eat them, like, the entire ecosystem is just stacked with mineral content, with alloys and things, like, in the bones. And so when people, when these creatures have all that richness in their bones, we've talked before about like wolf steel, or the idea of like, you know, burning the bones to create, or like putting bones into the metallurgy that you create. Maybe there's a discovery, or one of the things that is like regularly understood is the richness of the bone. Like when you create bone meal or something, you're grinding it up because you can actually find those, you're breaking down and getting those trace bonds of the elements in there. And so at some point in Orun, they start to figure out how to make weapons by literally grinding the bones down and then melting and purifying the metals out of them, or by maintaining, like, grinding the bone down but maybe they like char the edge or something in a way that actually hardens it. I don't know. There's stuff that you could do with that, I think.
I like it. It's good.
So anyways, yeah. So there are still like mines and things, but they're just a lot less frequent because the minerals are everywhere. It's very uncommon to have the veins or deposits. Okay. Anyways, that was my one. I think that, plus then you can do a lot of fun alchemical things with the bone matter.
Well, Frank, I hope you've enjoyed this exploration into the lands of Arun and the realms beyond. If you enjoyed listening,
I did.
Frank, you can give the Lord Keepers a 5-star rating on iTunes.
Oh, I would like to do that.
Or you can tell other people about us. You can tell your partner / girlfriend / room housemate. You could tell Josh Silker. We'll get to him in a bit.
Uh-huh.
You could tell a variety of people.
Mm-hmm. So just because it's the end of the show doesn't mean the world building stops. Now, normally this is where we would plug the aftermath. Right now, we're going to take a hiatus from the aftermath for now. There just hasn't been a ton of activity on it. And I think, you know, we want to try stuff. We tried it and we got an opportunity to experiment with it. Maybe one day we'll come back to it. I think for now we're thinking we are going to turn off the lights, you know, flip the open sign over to closed for the evening on that one. If you really want to have it be brought back, then you know, feel free to bang on the door and try and get us to, you know, open up shop again. But I think for now, the aftermath is a fun idea, but we're gonna let it lie. However, the subreddit is still around, and when I have the opportunity to write new art, like entries into the record of the Lorekeeper, I continue to do that. So if you are looking for more content, feel free to check that out or post on the subreddit. See, you know, if either somebody else in the community or we oftentimes like to respond to those. So,
the subreddit is the perfect place, Frank, to find resources, ask questions, and make your mark part of the discourse. You can also reach us at the Lorekeepers on the Twitters, or you can email us at lorekeeperspodcast@gmail.com. LoreKeepersPodcast@gmail.com.
And finally, we just want to thank Josh Shilker for his composition of Land of Heroes, Lorekeepers theme. Thank you, everyone, for listening.
Until next time, don't forget there are always more sire bears to dire.
Sire bears to dire bear. All right, thanks everybody. Have a good rest of your week. Stay safe. Yep. Fuck the police. Black Lives Matter. Go protest. All right, bye.
All right. Not recording when you're not there, Frank.
It's okay. I'm proactive for both of us.
You're always recording. That's your secret.
Like the U.S. government. But I understood the reference.
Excellent.
No, I was actually gesturing to this. I don't know if you can see this in the
I'm currently making a folder, so I can't see you.
Ah, okay. Okay.
S233...
You know, I think this is S2. Oh, it is 233, yeah.
Who knows what it's going to be titled, but I want to put my shit in the folder.
Something about cum or something, I don't know.
Probably. Every time I open up my recents, for some reason, Meowster Sword's up there, and it makes me smile.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I uploaded the test.
Okay. Oh, great, good. And you're recording now?
I am recording now.
Great. Let's do a real quick time that is.
What time are we doing it on?
We'll do 40? It on 45.
45.
Let me check this test. I hope it's better, because I was gonna say, I was like, man, I don't know if you've been listening to the recent ones, but they have been rough. The audio has, on your end, has not been the greatest.
Yeah, well, it happens.
And I have to do a lot of Fandango, grim Fandangoing, make it work.
Yeah.
All right, here. So, shut up for a second. Okay, that is, I can still hear it. I can still hear the fans and everything like that, but that is way, way better in terms of something that I can actually, like, work with, so.
Okay, so all I did, I'm sure I explained it to you, actually, Frank. That's what the test was.
Mm-hmm. You moved it in front and stuff.
Yep, so now it's arcing over my new 27-inch 2K monitor.
Ooh, wait, 2K? Yeah.
2K.
So 1080p?
No.
2K is 1080p.
2K is 1440.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh.
So it's 2560 by 1440 resolution.
That's great. Dude, that's a good, that should be a really good monitor.
Yeah.
Also, feels, like, I don't really play most video games in 4K anymore. I mean, it's great to have that resolution, but really, especially because I play a lot of stuff on Steam Link now, I'm playing things at a, you know, at a
720p.
At 1080p, but okay. Definitely. Oh, forgot to get the other corner of the plaza down.
Oh, do you have your analog TV out so you get no lag when you play Super Smash Brothers?
Is that really a thing?
Yeah.
Is that a thing people do?
It's a thing. Yeah. They have giant box TVs.
What does that even mean? Analog TV. Like, that doesn't give you latency? I don't understand.
Yeah, there's some sort of
digital latency.
There's digital latency when it comes to older games.
Oh, like a Melee?
Yeah.
Versus, I see.
Yeah, the original Melee on GameCube. You can't play it on a new TV without latency.
Hmm.
You need an old-timey TV, one with, you know, vacuum tubes that slowly irradiates you.
Wait, do they really?
Probably not, but you never know. I feel like most things in the 50s irradiate you. You know, they just
I feel like most things in general, we have, and most technology created in the last 100 years, we've discovered irradiates us.
That's probably true. But most
anything, basically anything with a battery.
You know that in the state of California, telephone poles are carcinogenic?
What?
In the state of California, telephone poles are
carcinogenic. No, I heard you. I don't understand what you mean.
There's
I know that
joke.
They have that, like, warning.
Yeah, that you have to put that on a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And the chemical used to preserve telephone poles is carcinogenic.
Rachel and I were looking at the review for, an air-popped popcorn maker, and pointing out that, like, that this person clearly didn't know what they were talking about because they were giving it a bad review because it had that warning on it. And she's like, everything in California has that warning on it.
Except, like, cigarettes.
Oh, it's got carcinogens in it? Da, 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 da. Can't use this air popper. And she's like, okay, this person clearly doesn't know what they're talking about because that's something that shows up on literally every product in California.
It's true. But didn't we want to do, I think we made some sort of weird promise, a sexy promise on the podcast where you were going to do viewing next.
A sexy promise?
I mean, it's the best kind of promise, right? Except for the ones that come true.
This has got to be a song that you're referencing.
I don't know, Frank.
Promises are the best kinds of promises, except for the ones that come true. That's definitely lyrics to something.
It probably is.
By the way, dude, did you end up checking out the Amory score?
I haven't checked it out yet.
Oh my god, dude. I feel so much less bad about our world building, discovering that this made it into a comic and a band, because it is... it's so bad. Oh my god, it's so bad, man. Like, there are comics that accompany this band's stuff, and they're so terrible. Anyways, the podcast is fantastic, but the Monstar, that's the name of the disease that's in their blood or whatever, and I believe that
bit on those.
Yeah, I believe that what ends up happening is that it creates a Sinistar or whatever, like. Anyways, there's blue alien women angels who protect the heavens.
How many tits?
Heavens, not heaven's gate, heaven's fence. yeah, I know. There's 70. Okay, now this is the one thing that's actually kind of cool, is the idea that there are, I believe it's either 72 or 78 planets that are in, like, a triangular arrangement, and they're all just connected via some
Illuminati
sort of mystical space energy. What'd you say?
Illuminati confirmed.
Oh, you could tell that this guy's got that kind of energy. The co-hosts are pointing out the fact that, like, all of this is the lead singers creating the lore for this world, and I think it's helping him deal with a breakup when he was 19. That's how it started.
Wow.
Yeah, there's a place called Paris, Earth, and it's a planet. And it's like, or maybe it's, no, it's, it might be Paris Earth, it might be Paris France, or it's like Paris colon Earth, but it's literally like about the time that he went to France. He flew to France and shit. Also, the surviving child, all the children die because they have the Monstar. Oh God, that's so bad. The surviving child's name is Claudio, which is the name of the lead singer.
Wow.
And okay, I read through the first volume because it's like nothing, and I was just like curious, just paging through it. And literally, the main character is in high school, and he gets bullied for drawing out some sort of thing that, like, it's very clearly a stand-in for this person who is okay in terms of an illustrator. I don't know if the lead singer also drew these comics, but like very clearly is like drawing on Claudio, the main character slash lead singer, is believing himself to be this, like, he's just totally a stand-in for this character. It's so weird, man. It's so weird. Also,
sounds like, yeah, bad Harry Potter fan fiction.
Oh, it's worse, man. There's also just like absolutely terrible, extremely misogynistic using, I mean, it's text versus subtext, I guess.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. Let's see. Oh, it's Coheed and Cambria. That's the name of the band. I was trying to remember. Yeah, no,
like,
it's pretty
like the
bad.
Capital, like, of Australia? Canberra?
Probably, honestly, probably named after the capital of Australia. Maybe he knew somebody from Australia or something.
Maybe he went to Australia and was like, yes, Canberra.
Yeah, I know. It's so bad, though, dude. Like, also just like the writing of the comic itself, it's so just disjointed and all over the place, and nothing has like much like logical followed sense, or if it does, it's the most cliched, like, basic ass storytelling attempts. Everything is just like, I don't know, characters are just super volcanic and mercurial,
volcanic.
And they're just like all over the place. The dad just freaks the fuck out one morning. I don't know, it's ridiculous. It's so bad, dude. You definitely should check it out. The music is kind of slaps. It's pretty damn good.
It slaps. Mm-hmm. Ooh-wee. Oh, Frank. Mm-hmm. I need to tell you. So yesterday, ooh-wee, I took an 8. Very good reference. I took an 8-hour trip to Birmingham. Birmingham.
Birmingham.
Yeah, that's the one.
As we'd say.
4 hours there, 4 hours back.
In the north. What's in Birmingham?
Frank. I went to see my grandfather with my mother, who's in a home and is not very well because he's demented as fuck.
Okay.
Health-wise, he's fine. But his mind just isn't there. But, you know, we don't need to talk about that, Frank. That's sad. I saw a fucking Aldi's.
Wait, is that your first one?
Yes! I didn't know there were Aldi's as far south.
Apparently they are. I had no idea. I guess I forgot that you like just didn't have an alt. Man, wow, that's what is our what? How sad is my life that we're getting excited over the fact that a grocery store that I talk about all the time. Man, you want to talk about giving people shit and what's that game called? The one that's about a very sad man who carries babies across the country.
Oh yes. With Norman Reedus in it. Death Stranding.
Dang, thank you. I was going to say it's got the dirty biker boy from
Norman Reedus, yep.
Norman Reedus, who I actually quite like he seems like a pretty alright dude.
Yeah, he seems like a nice guy, but he just needs to take, like, I don't know, an eternity of showers.
Well, and that's the funny thing is like, he just, apparently all the characters he play are just covered completely in shit. Like, they've come out of a tar pit. Like, they always look so dirty. Also, can I just, really quick side note, it is absolute bullshit that everyone in Walking Dead is wearing such sweaty, shitty clothes all the time. There's literally, like, full department stores where nobody has grabbed any clothing for months or years at this point, or whatever how long it's been. And it's like, just fucking go get a new pair of pants, dude. They have 60 in your size. Even if they look like Wranglers, even if they're Wrangler jeans and have absolutely no ass to them, just put them on, because then it adds a little bit of color to your incredibly sad, pathetic world.
They have no ass? Are they like fucking chaps? Are they leather chaps? No, hanging out?
Yeah, yes, exactly. No, I'm not
That's my kind of fucking film.
I'm not a huge fan of Wranglers. Last time I wore them, they give you no butt.
I wear exclusively, when I wear jeans, because I have a sponsorship. No.
You know, is that a reference?
No. I'm trying to remember what the jeans things are. It's a very popular...
Rick and Morty did it. Do you remember that? I don't know if you saw this most recent season.
I haven't seen the most recent season that came out a few months ago.
Okay.
Can you name an American blue jeans brand real quick?
Wrangler.
No.
Levi's.
That's the one. I wear Levi's. I quite like Levi's.
I'm a Levi's guy. Yeah.
They fit me very well. I have a Levi's t-shirt because I went to Europe and everyone was wearing Levi t-shirts. So I'm like, yep, I'm in.
Oh, yeah, where it just has like the Levi's logo across the chest. Yeah, I don't know why that's a thing in some countries, but it totally is.
I think that might also
be a thing in Japan.
The research I saw was that over there, Levi's are seen as being like designer stuff.
Mm.
And so they're actually considered like fancy.
Oh, cool.
So people would wear it in the same way you would wear, like,
something Beckham would
like
wear.
Like a Giorgio Armani shirt or something like this.
Right. Did I ever tell you about my fake Armani?
No.
My faux Armani?
No, you haven't.
Okay. Do you know about the Grand Bazaar in Istanbul, right?
It's
like
know
those covered markets. It's like this beautiful, really cool old structure that just like continues for a while. And it's like these like arcades, basically. It's just like these awesome covered arcades where it's not arcades because it's enclosed, but it feels like that.
Look, Frank, you're getting a bit architecture here. Reel it in.
Okay. Well, for the record, do you know what an arcade is?
No.
Okay. An arcade is like, so if you have the side of a church, maybe, and you have the columns that are making up the side of the church, and then they arch over, and then on the other side, it's just open. Like, it's not actually, there's, like, no wall on the other side, and there's columns there, and the columns create, like, a consistent path. That's called an arcade. So sometimes you will have an arcade that connects two buildings together, because it'll be basically, like, a covered area with pillars, and then just, like, yeah.
Oh, apparently I'm very sophisticated, Frank. I've made an arcade in Minecraft.
Yeah, that's awesome. Way to go. Wow, you know, really, really incredible. Where was I? Oh, okay, Grand Bazaar, Armani, Fomani. So the Grand Bazaar, very cool place. Everything's way overpriced because of tons of tourism. It's way too expensive to try and sell stuff there. However, it is still seen by the rest of the city as a place that you frequently go to get stuff. A lot of the area around the Grand Bazaar is a gray market. It's not exactly illegal, but you can kind of get in trouble. It depends, like, basically whether you make trouble for the police or not. And there was a person who was selling, I don't think it was real Armani. It couldn't have been real Armani. I'm pretty sure that Armani was printed backwards. Like, it was printed backwards along it. So maybe it was, like, you know, cast-off stuff or something. But I was able to get a couple of Armani shirts for like $12 each.
Wow.
So, yeah. Anyways.
Very nice.
Yeah, yep. So I had Armani fake Armani for a short time. Or they probably just put it on there so that they could sell it for more.
But what's weird, Frank, is that going back to Aldi's. There's no Aldi's.
Oh, right.
There's no Aldi's in South Carolina. I haven't seen one.
Mm-hmm.
But there's one in Birmingham, Alabama.
Which is further south, right? That's deep
it
south.
It is, yeah.
I like that you go deep south and then you hit Florida.
Which is just a stranger in a strange land.
It's a different manifestation of racism. You know, it's like old white person retired racism versus...
Exactly.
And just like trash people racism. No, exactly. That's not fair.
No, it's fair.
Not everybody in Florida is a trash person. That's not
fair. True. There's only half of the people.
Well, anyways, oh dude, I was gonna tell you this. We'll start in a little bit here, but we still got time because like if you have time, I'd like to run a game of D&D tomorrow.
Yes.
Rachel got her computer back, so we're gonna partition that hard drive and install the other version of older Mac on it so that she can run Fantasy Grounds off of it.
Fuck me.
I know. It's just like, dude, Fantasy Grounds, you guys need to just get anything that's a modern architecture.
Why didn't she just dual boot?
What do you mean?
Why didn't she boot the whatever OS and then also have a Windows installed?
Oh, well, because she just doesn't really need to use Windows for anything.
Fantasy Grounds, apparently.
Well, yeah, but you can also run it on a Mac. You just need to use an older version.
It'd be
Mac.
Out of date.
Yeah. Well, I mean, well, and also, I believe, unlike Mac software, I think you still have to pay for a license to Windows 10.
Oh, wow.
Mac licenses are free. They don't charge for their software anymore. Oh, but the thing I actually was going to tell you is the fact that I was up very late. The reason why I texted you so late last night was because I was up playing Monster Hunter.
Ooh.
And I figured out a couple of things. The first thing is I got to the point where I did the Legiana quest hunt. The second thing is I think I figured out how investigations work, or like how you get new ones. If you investigate a monster more, like if you literally look at their footprints and tracks and stuff like that, I think that's what might unlock the ability to hunt them later.
Okay.
In investigations and stuff. But I was able to get enough where I have the head, the legs, and the gauntlet armor pieces for the Legiana, and then I have the poofy creature's body and coil. And
you're rocking it.
It is rocking, man. It is pretty great. I now have, like, I think it's called Legiana's Blessing or something like that, or you know,
Divine Blessing.
Well, it's different because Divine Blessing is a different skill. This is okay. Like a set specific skill. But yeah, it increases my chance of getting rewards from quests, bonus rewards from quests, and I definitely get some good stuff now.
It's a shame you can't wear that to fight a Rathalos.
No, because it's like negative on fire, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Dude, we gotta get our Rathalos. I think that's why we haven't gotten any Rathalos investigations yet. First of all, I think you have to reach a certain point in the game's like leveling where it like allows you to do that. And secondly, I don't I don't think I've investigated a Rathalos enough. Cause like the thing that'll happen is you'll like be investigating like a footprints or whatever. And then it'll say on the side, like where your updates come in, investigation added. It's like, yeah. Oh, so like, you know, you investigate enough and then you can hunt him or whatever. Anyway, so yeah. I was up pretty late farming some new stuff. I got some really good shit. So
very good. We'll have to do that sometime. Mm-hmm. After I got back from Birmingham, I played The Last of Us 2.
How'd you feel about it?
Holy shit, Frank. I'm in probably like 3 or 4 hours, maybe 5 hours in, and it is so good.
Really?
Holy shit.
All right, good. I mean,
it
here's
is
the thing.
Amazing.
Most of the reviewers that I have heard have just not enjoyed it because it's gratuitous for, it sounds like the way that they describe it, it's gratuitous for the sake of gratuity. But I am curious to get what you get your read on it after you finish it. I'm very curious to know.
Yeah, so far it's really fucking good. Like,
all right.
Well, just like it, all the little things are there, all the like ducking at branches, and I bet if there's a corridor.
Oh, the gameplay. Is the game like is it, gameplay the experience of it? Is good?
I mean, the story is also amazing, Frank. Okay. I'll be honest with you. Are you ready for this? I really like the story. And also the excellent representation for LGBTQ+. Oh, gosh. Well, okay. I think it's actually LGBTQIA+ now.
Yeah.
They added some.
I think it might be intersexual. Or I think plus just means like all those that weren't covered above.
Yeah, but then now they've added more and the kept mm-hmm. plus. So I'm very confused, but it's fine. It just makes it hard to say.
Uh-huh, yeah.
So that's very exciting. I was a bit thrown, and I was like, what the fuck's going on here? And I saw the first transgender character, but I was like, okay, I get it now. Yeah. It was rough, because I was like, because I did that thing that, like, old white people do, where they're like, I need to figure out what this person's gender is. mm-hmm. but then I realized, I'm like, okay, this makes
old,
sense. I
old white people do make that voice, no.
Yeah, so I understand now, and that was interesting.
Cool.
And gosh, just like Frank, I'll be real. I don't often cry with video games, but this actually got me. I was emotionally invested, and it made me cry. It was crazy. Yeah.
All right. Well, I definitely still need to play the first one, which I played the first couple hours of because a friend of mine is really a huge fan of Naughty Dog and was like insisting I kept on playing it or whatever. I ended up playing through the Uncharted collection, which, you know, it's Indiana Jones, it's fine. You know, all the jokes about like, haha, you know, Nathan Drake kills a bunch of people. I was like listening to a review, like a you know, video games journalist recently, and he was just pointing out, like, you know, that doesn't have to, like, yeah, because he's an action hero. You know, like, you know, Indiana Jones doesn't necessarily have a scene where he, you know, spends like, you know, 4 minutes pouring one out for the Nazi boys that he just like threw a grenade at. Like, oh man, like, but they were just children. I killed 20 people. He's somewhere between a rabid dog and a revving engine.
With a bit of Arnie thrown in.
Anyways, my point just being, like, in those, you don't play those games because you're waiting for Drake to sort of, like, have that heart-to-heart with the camera and be like, hey, I really did a lot of bad shit. But when games try to reach for that, like, a good example is the Tomb Raider series. When it tries to play in that space, I mean, Lara just comes off as, like, the most, like, terrifying, you know, because it's trying to do the Last of Us narrative plus Assassin's Creed levels of, like, cool-ass kills where you, like, you know, used a rope dart to hook, you know, into somebody and then hang them from a tree by their neck spike or whatever. It's like, whoa, that's so fucking cool. It's like, Lara, you're like a 21-year-old girl killer. And it's kind of terrifying.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
The Last of Us really does it well, where it's like, killing people is a big deal.
Yeah, it sounds like they really, really try to bring that home in this. I'd be curious to see what you say after like later hours, because I haven't played Last of Us Part Two.
You need to play the first one as well. Like, I finished that game in one sitting, Frank. I did not stop.
Okay, I'll check it out. I have too many things already on my. I'm still reading Mistborn, you know.
Frank, you have two eyes. Damn it, use them.
Fuck you, man. You don't know what it's like. I'm also trying to run a podcast and edit the fight. Yeah. Oh, wait. That was a joke. I just realized you're joking.
Yeah. Hank, I know you're busy.
Yeah. Kind of, a little bit. Anyway, so I guess we're playing D&D tomorrow.
I guess so.
But I've got the time for that. That's fine.
Yeah, maybe you should say fuck you to me and Rachel and go play Last of Us.
No, I've got time. I would rather play a bunch of little indie games right now anyways, in addition to the AAA games, but, you know, I'm playing Monster Hunter. That's where my time is going into right now.
That was a mistake, Frank. That's such a fucking massive time sink.
It really is, dude. Apparently, we're still, like, apparently you get to a certain point where it reaches a threshold, and then it splits the armor sets between low rank and high rank. Like, there's a second tab of armors that we haven't even seen yet, because we're still in low rank, which is like...
I'm assuming the game is, like, 100 hours long, Frank.
I think it might be more than that. Honestly, I think this is a game that some people play like they play WoW. Like, you can apparently grind endgame stuff, or maybe not WoW, maybe Destiny is a better example, but, like, yeah. Apparently you can grind endgame content. Apparently there's, like, the equivalent of, like, gem socketing in the armor that you get, so you can get in different rarities of the gems based on what you are killing. So, yeah, it just keeps on going, man. It's fun.
Yeah.
It's like, why am I bothering to make any specific armors right now or grinding for anything? Because we're still in the low ranks.
Because you want that cool-looking fucking puffy armor.
Dude, I'm just so tired of wearing the Rathian coil, man. It's just the giant hoop skirt. I don't want to hunt in that anymore. I don't. It's just huge. It's a bunch of metal plates and chainmail. It's just, like, hanging off my body like I'm a dying tree. I don't know. It's bad.
The male version of the Rathian coil literally is like a short skirt. It's great.
Oh, really?
It's like tiny.
Well, it doesn't matter. Everybody wears thick trunks in that game anyways.
Yeah, they're wearing their trousers.
It's like they're not even like trunks like you'd wear if you were working out, like compression shorts. They're like, it looks like somebody took black jorts and rolled them up like around the mid thigh. It's like, that cannot be comfortable. Like when you sit down, I guess you're probably not sitting down a lot. Hunters do not sit down.
Except when they're roasting meat on a spit.
Right, which I haven't played that minigame in fucking forever.
It's actually hard when you come back to it, because I burned my first piece of meat. I'm like, fuck. I thought it was like 30 seconds. It's more like 5.
I mean, thank God it's not 30 seconds. Jesus. Imagine doing that for every single piece of meat. I mean, it's already arduous enough as it is. I wish you could just do it. What I should really do is I should just get a bunch of meat, go on an expedition, cook it, then immediately return, then go on an expedition, cook more, immediately return. Yeah.
That sounds great. That sounds like it's a great thing.
It's a great time. Anyways.
That's the only way you can fucking cook meat.
Yeah. It's just, man, that fucking game. It's so, in the words of John, it is so Japanese. Like, this is so many just, like, idiosyncrasies of the way that the game is built that is just like, you can just feel the sediment. Which, by the way, that game is way more streamlined than it used to be. Some of the things from previous Monster Hunter games.
Don't say
I know. First
Don't
of all,
say
no scout flies. If you wanted to track a creature, you had to shoot a paint, I think it was like a paintball at them. And then that would mark them, and you could see that target, but it would eventually wear off, and then you just have no idea where they are, and you just have to go, like, wander around through area after area after area. Also, stamina did not regenerate while you climbed, so if you started climbing vines early, then you would literally be, like, you'd get halfway up, and you'd run out of energy, and you just have to, like, go back down. Whetstones were not infinite. You had mini whetstones and normal whetstones, and every time you used a whetstone, it would expend it, which is not how whetstones work in the real world. So I don't know why you'd be carrying like 6 whetstones with you. What the fuck? What else? Oh, every time, you know how you can like run past a bush and like pick up, mushrooms, but you can't pick up mushrooms from a bush. You run past a bush, you pick up some sort of plant, or you run past mushrooms and you just like tap circle on your way and you don't really have to slow down. Every single collectible in those spaces before was something where if you went up to it, it would go through a pre-built animation, like you were searching through a bone pile or whatever, but the equivalent for flora. So like every time you wanted to collect anything, it was just like you had to stop and wait.
I think the next Monster Hunter, every single plant, you'll have to do a mini game. You have to like press like circle,
do,
square,
do,
triangle,
do, do,
triangle.
Do, 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 do. And you just have to like time your like catch. So it's like, oh, I was going to catch the berries, but then I fucked up and I crushed it with my powerful monster cutter hand. Or whatever the fuck. Yeah. Oh,
or
man.
Like you go to grab it and then your fucking cat just like eats it and you're like.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, exactly.
That's the next one.
Anyways, the game is much better than it used to be, which is really saying something. It is still a very high bar or barrier for entry, but it is.
I would not, Frank, if I had bought that game, I would have played an hour and been like, fuck this shit. If not for you.
Yeah. If it not for like your long suffering, your patience for playing it with me. But man, I mean, once you get past those absurd hurdles and start to just like be like, yeah, this game's a bunch of bullshit. Anyways, I'm going to spend the next 25 minutes staring at lists and lists of armor so that I can get the perfect build to go take down this, you know, take down this creature.
And just like fucking stupidly switching, which it takes like a minute each time to switch between the armor page and then, okay, let me pull out my book.
Looking at the monster field guide, checking the physiology. What things do I want to cut? Okay, so, which, dude, I really need to, the Baros or whatever. Is it the Baros? The whirling guy? Not Baroth. The Baroth, because that's the
you
one
mean
with
the Rataban?
Baraban or whatever?
Radoban.
Yes, the Radoban. I think I need to learn how to use a new weapon, because I don't know. I can try and use it against the Radoban, but it just feels like I am constantly bouncing off of it. My weapon is constantly bouncing off of the thing, and it just doesn't seem like it's really making contact. So
I had that problem a little bit, but it wasn't very bad. I just kept.
Yeah, you have a longsword, right? So yeah. It's not even like it shouldn't. It wouldn't necessarily be better for you. I don't know. I want to figure out how to use like a blunt weapon, maybe a lance or something. I don't know. Gun lance, perhaps.
Yeah, maybe be like lightning.
Yeah. Yep. Something.
Don't you always want to be like lightning?
What'd you say?
Don't you always want to be like lightning?
Is this a reference to something?
Don't you know about lightning? Final Fantasy 13? Final Fantasy 13 2? Final Fantasy Lightning Returns?
I mean, yeah, I know about lightning. What does that have to do with anything? She's because she has a gun lance?
Yeah, she has a gun sword.
It's a gun sword, not a gun lance, but yeah. Same deal.
Yeah, but it's a little bit different than fucking.
Which
what's
is
like
so silly. It's a revolver in the middle of like in the middle of a barrel of a sword. It's like you're gonna hold it like this, and it's like 6 pounds or something. And you're just
have
gonna
you played Final Fantasy VIII, Frank? Do you know about Leon?
I haven't played Final Fantasy. The only Final Fantasy I've ever actually played was Crisis Core.
Crisis Core is a great one.
It's a good one. It is vastly underrated, and people are saying that it's time for a remake. Or at least a remaster.
It's really fucking good
of here. Crisis Core, and I would love that, man. I would love that so much.
You need to see this, Frank. You're in Discord.
All right, I'll open up Discord, and then we should probably start. Yeah, because
we should probably 40 start.
Minutes. All right,
need
I'm
to
opening
see
it up.
This fucking anime bullshit.
I'm just saying, like, you don't know about lightning? Of course, I know about. Like lightning, yes, the character, sure, but also lightning is also static discharge in the Earth's atmosphere. It's
fuck
also
off,
the name of a race car in a Pixar movie. It's also like 12 other things. Saying you don't know about lightning doesn't really do much. All right, I'm in a direct message right now. I'm in your DMs. Do you want me to be in the Jack's threshold?
No, it's fine. I can DM you, Frank.
Where do you want me, DM Daddy?
There you go. That's that. Look at that. You see that?
Yeah, it looks terrible.
That is Leon's sword. It's even stupider. It's literally a gun.
How do you hold that? How do you hold that? It looks like somebody took like a knife from like a knife block and then like created special molding for his fingers, and then fucking what the hell?
I know, it's so fucking stupid. I love it.
Where does the bullet come out of? Is that what that extended piece is on the side?
Maybe.
That is so silly.
Yep.
How do you swing that thing?
I don't know.
You have no leverage. And you've got a weird, like, dangly bit that I'm sure is just going to be bonking around your wrist. But it's for style, you know?
It is.
Wow. Anyways, the gun lance basically just looks like a lance. Well, okay, you know what? The gun lance is dumber because it's a lance where the pop comes there, the top comes down like this, it swings out, and that's where the barrel of this giant revolver goes. Which, like, quite literally, it looks like a giant revolver, man.
I just imagine, like, you have a string attached to, like, the top, and you, like, pull the string, and it goes.
Basically, I think that you like pop it down or whatever, but like it straight up just looks like somebody stuck a like here's a person holding a gun lance. Oh my god, here, copy image, because the difference is they're not holding it the way a person would hold a revolver. They're holding it the way a person would hold an AK-47, except it's got a revolver barrel.
What the fuck.
I mean, I guess in this situation, it looks a little bit more like a bayonet. That kind of makes more sense. But God, how heavy do you think that thing is? 280 pounds? 400 pounds?
It looks like it's just a solid brick of steel. So yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the Buster Sword is supposed to be like 70 pounds.
It's made of plastic.
When it's made out of metal, which is just so absurd. But
I mean, it's got to be because fucking, I don't know if you've noticed, but.
What?
Cloud is a twink. Newsflash.
Okay, wait, so how's that related to the fact that he has got a big-ass sword?
It's because he can't carry, like, a fucking 130-pound sword. He's a twink. I mean, you could make some soldier bullshit up, I guess.
Wait. You're saying the problem with Cloud is that his weapon isn't heavy enough?
No, I'm saying if it were heavier, he couldn't hold it. Unless you bring in some soldier bullshit because he's a twink. He's not a beaver or a bear.
You keep on using that word. In what context are you using that?
In the gay context, Frank.
Oh. I didn't realize he was gay.
He's not. Well, he's probably not. He might be. That'd be great. I'd love that.
I don't understand what you're trying to say. What is that? What, like, he's a twink. What is that? Like, what do you mean?
So, a twink refers to a body type.
Oh, yeah.
He is a hairless, skinny, young-looking dude.
Okay.
And that's a twink.
I would be really fucking impressed if anybody I knew who, twink or not, was carrying a 70-fucking-pound sword and swinging it around. So I still don't know where you're going with this. That's that would be an impressive feat. Are you saying in the world of Final Fantasy?
Well, I mean, it's also the problem of, you know, the Mako shit. You know, he's a soldier. He was infused with Mako. You can tell by looking at his beautiful green eyes, Frank.
Oh, I see.
Look into them.
I see now. I understand. Yeah.
You've played Final Fantasy Crisis Core. You know, Soldier, Mako.
Same. Sure. I just forgot.
What's his name? Zack?
Zack. Yeah, Zack Fair.
What a lack. All right, Frank, I'm starting to lose my verbal capacity.
I know. We got to start the podcast. All right, this is 23, so it's an odds. That means it's me, right?
Yep.
All right.
So do we want to do imbuing, or do we want to do worship corruption?
I think that we do imbuing.
All right, 100%. Locked in, ready to go.
All right, I am amped all the way up.
To 7.
I am hard as possible. My penis hurts.
Throbbing painfully. All right.
Yep. That means I've got podcast energy. Woohoo!
Yep.
All right.